All right, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, everyone. I am very excited for today's conversation and recording. We haven't had one in a handful of weeks, as many of you know, more specifically the members than the public audience. With that said, though, we are joined today by someone who I am very excited to have on, Miranda, who is a quantum healer, but I don't want to describe what she does for her. So without further ado, before getting into some very interesting topics that her and I have discussed in private that we've decided to bring forward to the discussion here today. Miranda, how are you? And if you can just give us a bit of a breakdown of what you do, your background, all of that, and we can get into a discussion here.
First off, thank you for having me on. I'm just so very honored to be on your show and really very, very grateful that we were able to connect through a mutual friend and just talking and learning about all the things that you do. And yeah, so just very, very thankful. I started off just again, very typical fast awakening. Started getting into my spiritual awakening, learned Reiki, became a Reiki master, became a hypnotherapy practitioner, really learned about shamanic practitioner work. It was a very interesting wake up. Things were very, very fast. And so it was quite a shock to me. I was never a spiritual person. But when I started learning Reiki and practicing on friends, I started getting information. I started getting images. I started getting smells and sounds and words and things that they were showing me. And a lot of it was having to do with esoteric and natural elemental things related to shamanic and native tribal practices and things, which I was not familiar with. So I obviously knew that it was something a little bit more than Reiki with all of this information coming through. And when I started sharing it with people, I was a little bit hesitant, very afraid of like, I just don't understand this. But I became more comfortable with sharing it when I understood how it worked. And I started studying a little bit more about the basics of quantum physics and learning how I was able to see some of the things that I was able to see, to hear. Past life things and making the connection between the science and the spirituality was a huge key piece for me, really getting comfortable with in my practice, and really, really having a solid understanding of what it was I was seeing and really just giving me the confidence that I needed to understand it. And again, just making me a better practitioner for knowing how to explain things to clients when they do come through. So.
Well, thank you for that. That was very, very well put, and I really appreciate your going into that. One of the things that I wanted to dive into that we could correlate to both verbally and maybe even visually here is I will share my screen for those that are watching visually is the concept of transgenerational trauma. And I wanted to talk with you about this because one thing that I found quite peculiar about this here on Wikipedia is that we see here transgenerational trauma seems to be quite accepted as something that is established with regards to what people feel. But the moment it starts, moving into the area or field of science, we notice here that the And I quote, according to Wikipedia, this article has multiple issues because the specific problem is that the article contains multiple pseudoscientific claims, such as that dance therapy can change someone's DNA. Now, I'm not dying on the hill of the dance therapy comment or point, but what I wanted to speak to here was this notion of how transgenerational drama is something that is quite avidly accepted. It's something that has been people go through, myself, yourself, many people, you can argue, we know we go through it. But we see here the immense detailed description, not just by Wikipedia, but by other sources and resources of this transgenerational drama and how it can pass through from one person to another. We see here, for example, and I quote, collective trauma is when psychological trauma experienced by communities and identity groups is carried on as part of the group's collective memory and shared sense of identity. For example, collective trauma was experienced by Jewish Holocaust survivors and other members of the Jewish community at the time, such and as well as Indigenous peoples of Canada during the Canadian Indian residential school system, as well as By Black Americans who were also enslaved as well. So we see that there's this notion that there's a fo sort of I don't want to say egregore, but this sort of identity, this loose connection or identity that people tend to correlate with, that seems to be something that is felt and acknowledged, but not acknowledged in a way that we can verbally describe. So this starts to make me look and think about things like bifurcation, for example. This notion that even when you look at the fingerprint bifurcation essentially means splitting something into branches of two or more, so to speak. Usually, when one branch of anything splits into two, and we see whether it's the fingerprint or whether it is the way in which, in quantum physics, the way that the wave function or the way in which particles and waves operate, we see this constant connection between something that cannot be verbally described or attributed. It's physically expressed, but there's no physical source that we can physically detect, at least as of now. But it's accepted, yet at the same time, it's also considered pseudoscientific, according to these official sources. So where do you stand on the notion of collective trauma? And you can take this any direction you want to go down if you want.
I have so many thoughts about this.
Please, yes.
It's interesting because one of the things that I've learned in my practice is that we do work on multi-generational or transgenerational trauma. I would get stories about, a female or a male from that person's family and see and experience what they experience. What's interesting to me is that I kind of set the deal in my sessions that I don't want to see a play by play of something that someone has gone through. However, what I am allowed to see and what I do experience or feel and understand deeply is the emotions.
Sorry, do you find that in certain cases for your sessions, the play-by-play, approach is necessary for certain clients compared to others?
No. The reason why, and again, this really came from some of my own experiences of, when you work with people who are intuitive, you want to make sure that there's a good balance and that they're acting in the appropriate way. Are they seeking the information in a healing session that is going to help or to hinder, or in some cases, disempower the individual on their healing journey? Some people don't have full and complete memories of things that have happened to them, and they certainly don't have complete and full memories of multi-generational trauma. However, the emotion and the frequency that that emotion holds is stored within the body at the cellular level. So they understand the feeling, but don't necessarily have to relive or re-experience the actual act itself of what the actual problem was, whether it was their own or whether it was someone else's. But the feeling, the emotion is what is still stored. And that is what we're there to work with. So we don't have to have the full story of what happened to someone. Now, if there's a situation where I need a little bit more information, I'll definitely ask the questions, the who, what, when, where, why, just enough to get what we need in order to know why this is here. So one particular example that I like using is I had a cancer patient. The cancer was in the lower digestive. However, in the session, I was led up to the heart and realized that this was related to something where there was extreme anger from something that was very hurtful from a family member. So this is a heart chakra thing. So you can have things that are stored in different places of the body and not know why. When you ask those questions, you're really, really going to get that. No, some details
Okay.
can be helpful, but the main reason why I don't ask for the complete full play-by-play of what has happened to someone, unless that person is willing to share that information, I certainly hold space for that. But I can find that with some of my trauma clients, some people who have experienced multi-generational trauma, it is much too difficult to have them relive or re-remember those things within a session. So we work mainly with the emotions. So when I start getting into an area that has a block and I'm thinking, okay, there's something here, we need to explore this, I start asking, why is this here? And then we start getting we'll start getting words, and they usually are associated with emotions. I've noticed that they very, very frequently match up with the Hawkins scale of emotions. I'm sure you're familiar with that. So I'll get words like grief, I'll get rage, I'll get those, and then we start to work with it. And then I may get stories about ancestors about why those are there in the healing part of the session that has to do with the ancestors.
Do you get, for example, memories from their ancestors, or do you ever get glimpses of those going as far back as however long?
Sometimes I do. Probably the best way to explain it is when I start working in the session, I'll be in a specific chakra, and it's associated with emotions, with creativity, with family, and that's where the ancestors show up for me. They're very specific, and it's very methodical in the way that it works. There will be a representative that comes from that person's lineage, both the mother's side and the father's side. And usually that person that shows up to assist in the session is the most, what we call, the most healed. So they've either crossed over many, many, many years ago, many, many generations ago, and they've been there, or they've been somebody that maybe didn't have a lot of trauma. It really just depends on what is best for this family, what is best for this soul. Once we start working with that representative, they have represent or they have ancestors that will come forward, and they may have what we call in the shamanic world a bundle of trauma, a bundle of something to release. And sometimes the bundles are, very, very tightly wrapped. What's interesting to me is when the ancestors come forward and say, start talking about the bundle that they want to release, a lot of times they'll tell me, I've been holding on to this my whole life, or this was something that was passed down in my family. This is the way that men or women were taught to be. This is the way that we were supposed to act, or we could not show emotion, or we could not show fear, or in some cases there's extreme poverty and there's a lot of shame and guilt from, parents not being able to provide for their young.
Do you, sorry,
So
just curious, in any of your past client sessions, have you found that there's been more of an emotional distress factor stemming from either the mother's side of the family or the father's side, or is it's just kind of random depending?
it's equally both in their own ways. As we know, feminine has been very much kind of been suppressed. There's been lots of misogyny. There's been lots of, and also some really distortion of what femininity looks like, what a woman is. We certainly have trouble defining that in our current world. On the flip side of that, with the masculine, we also have just as much wounding, but it's in a different way. The men are not allowed to show as much emotion. With a lot of the ancestral trauma work, there is many, many cases where the men say, I had to be strong. I could not show that I felt weak, or that I was scared, or that I was afraid, or that I was ashamed. I had to show up with courage. And there really wasn't a lot of place for men, for the masculine, to grow up with this ability to embrace and accept and have the full range of emotions, just like women. So each one, the masculine and the feminine, have been damaged, have been distorted in their own ways. So each one kind of has their own way of working itself out. No session is ever the same. So I would say the equal wounding on both sides. I don't want to.
When you just curious, when you go through a client's I don't want to put words in your mouth. I don't want to say things that you do that you don't actually do, but in terms of going through their past life memories in which they've permitted you to do so, with respects to the way that they're visually viewed, do you ever end up seeing them in what we would view as like nodes here, as what we're looking at here visually? Does this ring a bell? Does this come through to you in any way, or not really?
Not really. The way that things come through is I ask a question and they will literally give me one piece of information. And then it is my job to be the detective and say, okay, I have this. What are the characteristics of the information given?
And
And
this.
how can I flesh it out more? How can I add more detail? How can I add more color? How can I get the who, the what, the why?
And this is what you would call a bundle, or no?
Bundle is the trauma that is stored with that person that they've carried for that entire lifetime.
Right.
So when I start working on the ancestral part of the session, I'll see the women on the left and the men on the right. And when each one will come forward, they'll usually have, it's usually wrapped in like burlap. I still wonder why they show me things the way
Right.
they show them, but I think it's just to kind of keep
Sorry,
things
very
simple for
quickly, if I could ask, just because my mind thinks like fractals, is
me.
this large bundle made up of smaller bundles?
Sometimes they are, but
Okay.
what's interesting, and I've noticed this more with the masculine side of the ancestral healing than I have with the feminine. With the men, the emotions are much more compressed. So they may have like a bundle of emotions and it's kind of wrapped up in burlap, but it seems like more of the men, they have been holding on to the anger and it's almost like they're just squeezing it in their hands. I actually had one client's relative ancestor who was ready to release the bundle, and he had this bundle and he said, I've been ready to get rid of this. He said, I'm sorry for holding on to this. I'm sorry for these things that I did and the way that I acted. And of course, there's always forgiveness. There's always compassion and empathy and unconditional love that comes through when these people are ready to heal things and release them. Then he started pulling out all of these black, really, really hard rocks. And they were, he said, I was holding them in my hands. He said, I could feel how much anger I had. And I was just squeezing and squeezing and compressing all of this emotion. And he had compressed them down to these tiny little black rocks. And he just kept pulling them out of his pockets. And that was his way of saying, you know, I had so much that I was holding on to, and I didn't want anybody to know. I didn't want anybody to know how much pain I was in. So he just literally was squeezing them and compressing them into these little tiny rocks. And then he was holding them in his pockets for generations, long time, long
Wow.
time.
Well, and so just to clarify, you found that with respects to, at least from your experience with your clients, men, or the masculine tends to, hold on to memories much in a much more compressed manner that's not healthy for them.
Yeah, it's complete and it's a complete shutdown of allowing the self to feel those emotions, to acknowledge them.
Right.
The flip side of this for feminine is, you know, women have always been taught that they need to be happy, they need to be joyful, and that they don't need to be angry, because if you're angry, then we're going to assume that you're a bitch. So
Right.
it was not taught, especially where I grew up in the South, that women were not supposed to get angry. You weren't supposed to express any kind of negative emotions. It was, you must be happy and presentable all the time. So there's this feminine can't get angry, whereas the men, they can't show the softer emotions such as grief, sadness, you know, feeling hurt. So they literally have just been squeezing those emotions and just creating this like very dense, compact, little rock kind of object full of energy, full of these negative emotions.
And when you're doing these sessions for your clients in real time, has there ever been a scenario in which the trauma from a client, we'll transition this into the forgiveness of self, but the trauma that the client had was too much for you to bear at any point in time? Was there anything that felt very heavy on you, or did you ever sort of take it home with you in terms of after the session was over, you felt it attached to you for hours, if not days?
In the beginning, you know, I had some teachers that were not maybe so great at teaching me things that I should have had for protection. So, you know, what is it they say? Baptism by fire, you learn very quickly. There were a few sessions in the practice in the very beginning when I was really starting to get comfortable working on other people, when some things came through that was just very, very, very heavy.
Right.
And there are a couple of times where, you know, I've gotten emotional because I am literally feeling what needs to be released. So I
Right.
know where it's coming from. I know why it's here. I know what it feels like. I know what that person was feeling when that emotion got stored in the body at that time.
And
And so,
how?
yeah, there are times when it's a little bit difficult. At least in the beginning it was. Now it's, have appreciation for it. You know, it's not a job that necessarily everybody wants to do because they don't want to feel all the negative emotions. I consider it a blessing to be able to help people to come to terms with things that have happened in the past and release them so that it doesn't continue to perpetuate in their lives. So.
Right. And how much of that healing or that release in which your clients have exhibited, how much of that would you say is attributed to having to forgive themselves or to the grander notion of the forgiveness of self, either to start or to end with in terms of a self-healing journey or process? I know we've talked privately about how self-forgiveness arguably is one of the most difficult aspects of this. How much of that would you say in terms of your clients, are you finding that it's a matter of being able to forgive themselves, but needing a sort of a metaphysical mirror shown to them through individuals like you?
I would say probably half, at least half.
Have?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on where the person is on their journey. There are some that are in the beginning. They know they need a clearing. They know they need some help. They need some tools. And they know what's been done to them. And they're making peace with the past. The ones that have been a little more seasoned on their journey, those are the ones that seem to be less apt to forgive themselves as quickly as they forgive others.
Sorry, could you repeat that last sentence?
The ones that have been on their journey for a little longer, they're you know, they've become somewhat spiritual and aware. I would say their biggest challenge is forgiving themselves because of the fact that they know what it feels like to be the victim, to feel in so much pain, whether it's, you know, emotional, physical, whatever. They have a really hard time forgiving themselves because they know what they did wasn't exactly the best. It wasn't the best way to proceed. However, when they get to the point of going into their own heart chakra in the session, that's where the self-forgiveness, that's where the self-healing really, really comes through. When they're able to see and hear in the session, to learn about their value. You know, they've seen what they haven't been given. They've seen what they've been told, what they weren't. And now they get the chance to, again, that metaphysical mirror and see how valuable they are. And they don't need to hold on to that. And they really do need to forgive themselves. So.
How much have you found with regards to the online, we could say YouTube community of meditative videos and music and so on and so forth? How much of that have you found to be maybe not as beneficial as people may have thought in terms of certain videos not playing certain, we could say, resonances or tunes or tones or sounds that may not be as conducive to a healing or meditation scenario compared to others. How much of that have you come across? And I ask this because I know that there's quite a bit of we can say for quite confidently there's a fair amount of misinformation and disinformation riddled within the field that you work in, which, quick side note, makes people think, okay, if it's riddled that avidly, then clearly there's accuracy, truth, and legitimate results coming from there. If not, it wouldn't be filled with such malintent. But how much of that do you think is not just the tones played during videos, but in terms of things that are either preached or discussed in large groups about? How much of this do you think is maybe not a complete falsehood, but a half truth or an attempt to divert people to become followers in various subgroups or whatnot? Or do you think there's not that much of that going on?
I think there's a lot more of it now, than, say, maybe 2 years ago. I think we're reaching a very much a peak on this is the time to use your discernment. This is the time to really think about what resonates with you. Because again, your discernment is your key. It's your key forward. It's your key forward. Once you've worked on yourself, you've done some of the healing, you learn discernment, and that's your empowerment. So, as far as the frequency goes, the frequencies and tones and things like that, I mainly stick with solfeggio. I stick with crystal singing bowls, things like that. There's a couple of YouTube channels that I really like just because I feel like their meditations, not only are they guided, but they're very thorough. But again, this is where people need to use their discernment. If someone is claiming that they know everything, then we know that that's probably not true. So first off, I encourage people to start with solfeggio. Solfeggio is really simple. There's a million channels that play it, but I usually stick with a few. There's a couple on Spotify. Solfeggio, crystal singing bowls, Tibetan singing bowls, those are my go-tos. But if there's someone who's telling you to listen to something consistently, if they are, think about their delivery. What is it they're really selling you? I just think this is a time when people really need to be looking into things. They really need to think about it, step back for a moment, and practice discernment. That's our way forward.
I know we've talked in the past about this notion of just genuinely being curious and then using your own discernment to figure out what suits you and what doesn't, and vice versa.
Yeah, for me, as far as discernment and listening to these different tones and things like that, one thing that I've noticed is, and I teach this to some of my clients who are, on the journey and maybe in the beginning haven't really had a lot of energy work, haven't really been familiar with spirituality, quantum physics, not really into that stuff. I tell them to do this simple gut check. It's a really good way to practice, listening to your body when your body is telling you something is wrong and something is resonating. So I tell them to put a hand on their stomach, take a deep breath, get themselves nice and centered, and then say to themselves something that they know is true. Like, that the grass is green. And then repeat the process. Deep breath in, clear the mind, exhale out, and then tell yourself something that you know is false. Absolutely false. You'll be able to tell the difference within your body, something that resonates as true and something that resonates as false. That's a really good way to see what tones and what frequencies maybe resonate for you. I know there was something that was recommended to me several months ago, and I think I might have actually shared it with you. And I said, oh, this was sent to me. And I started listening to it, and it just really didn't resonate at all. And I think I asked you, I said, how did this sound to you? And you didn't really have much to say about it.
Yeah,
So
I remember. Yeah, I said it's not hitting me so well.
so again, you're gonna know everything that you need is within you. Everything is here. And I know that that is such a very simple, boiled down way to say things, and that, really
No, well, if
frustrates
I
people sometimes.
bow me and infolding and outfolding shows that this is legitimate, so I can back that up.
But your body knows. Like your body is constantly talking to you. Your body is an alarm system. It's going to tell you when something is wrong. So, again, I think this is part of humanity's way of we're growing up. We're learning to trust ourselves. And maybe even though we're still getting bombarded from many different, places, whether it's TV, emails, radio, whatever it is, we're learning to activate, to reignite, and to start utilizing that system that's already within us.
I couldn't agree more. And one thing I wanted to say or to do to wrap this up is that this notion of again, our discussion of, healing and sound and trauma and all of this. One thing I wanted to read here from the Wikipedia page, and I say this because I actually, let me share my screen here, that I found to be quite interesting in relation to things like sound, is that when, and I'm consciously reading off of Wikipedia, knowing that it's been, Wikipedia is not the best source to use for any type of accuracy relating, especially when it comes to relating to things that aren't officially set in stone that everyone knows is fact, so to speak, particularly in the field of science and all of that. But in the historical trauma category, we see here historical trauma is a subtype of transgenerational trauma. It results in vulnerability to mental and physical health problems due to ancestral suffering, which has been collected throughout generations into, quote, legacies of disability for contemporary descendants, end quote. Although the actual traumatic event and effect groups are heterogeneous, all historical traumas consist of three elements: a traumatic event, a resulting collective suffering, and a multi-generational impact of that trauma. Over time, the trauma and relationship to the victims typically evolve in a similar but more complicated way to genetic anticipation, resulting in a greater loss of identity of the victims and further integration into society. One of the things that I find so incredible about this notion of, not incredible in terms of that any traumatic event for anyone, but the notion of the merging of a non-physical interpretation of something that becomes physical throughout the course of not just one person's life, but the ones that descend from them. And one of the things this made me think of, to sort of put a glass half full spin on this, was the notion of sound waves. And the way in which certain events can occur as either pulsed spikes, or it can be, but it all occurs under the path of one long, sort of never-ending wave function in a certain way. And so it made me think of this notion that the same way that sound travels, and when people talk about how they resonate with certain people in another group, or I was in a room with someone and I resonated with them, or we were on the same wavelength. I find that those phrases are far more, could be used far more legitimately than otherwise maybe initially thought, especially with the notion that sound being so crucial to what we know as the formation of reality, that there may in fact be something with regards to words, the way they're spoken, incorporation of music, and that big sort of we could say bloodline that the trauma has gone throughout many generations. Do you ever feel any sound or acoustic components or elements during your sessions or after your sessions that come through to you very naturally by chance?
Yes. If there is a, this is going to sound really strange, but the first time that ever happened in a session, there was a song, like the song lyrics, I could hear them. And of course, I told the client, I said, I'm getting this song, and this is the song, and this is the lyrics. And of course, the client knew exactly what the song was, and the song was actually connected to a family member who'd passed on. That was their song that they used to sing with the family member that was receiving the healing.
Wow.
And of
Wow.
course, I think that's what I enjoy about this so much is the fact that every session is so different and there's always such a beautiful message, but it's so
Right.
very personal. Because, the song didn't mean anything to me, but
Deep,
it
right.
meant something to the client, and she knew exactly what and who was connecting in the session to assist her from the other side. So that was pretty neat.
Right.
That was pretty neat.
Right. Wow. Well, I think,
Something,
yep.
oh, I was gonna, I don't mean to interrupt,
No,
but
please, 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 please.
I was gonna say something interesting too. If you think about it, if you go all the way back to the Greeks knew they had identified seven tones that they knew could produce certain and specific emotions within the human body. So they were already using sound and frequencies to affect, whether positively or negatively, emotions and the physical state, the overall wellness of a human being, far beyond what we're doing now, or at least we're just now rediscovering it, I should say.
Right. Okay. So these are, I just searched up on Google Greek seven tones. Musical system of ancient Greece. This is very interesting. Okay.
When I had done a sound healing for a group last year, and I wanted to give them a little bit of information because none of them had ever really been to a sound healing. So I obviously found this information and I shared it with them, and I said, it's kind of interesting, everything in the universe is energy, everything is moving, everything is vibrating. So technically, your human body, as they were laying there receiving the sound healing, it's vibrating. And it's changing frequencies based on what sounds we were using during the sound healing. So I thought that was kind of interesting that, technically your human body is a
Yeah.
musical instrument and you are vibrating and you affect anything and everyone wherever you go.
I could not agree more. As in from my own line of work and all of that, this is very interesting. This particularly the sound aspect with regards to the Greeks and all of that. I know that Pythagoras was very much into all of that as well, but yeah, this has been great. So without further ado, if you could please let everyone know your website, your where you could be found, all of that, and I encourage everyone to please go and check out Miranda's work and to schedule a session with her. I've done one with her. She's absolutely fantastic, one of the best healers that I've ever encountered and met. So her work does very well, and it speaks for itself. So if you could let everyone know where and how you could be found, please.
My website is Golden Thread Healing Arts, and you can reach me hitting the contact button. You can also email me at miranda@goldenthreadhealingarts.com. I'm
Thank you.
also on YouTube as
Oh yeah,
well.
sorry. I didn't know if you were done yet or not.
Yeah.
All right, thank you so much, everyone. And please be sure to, for anyone interested in a healing session, reach out to Miranda, ideally through your website or
Website,
website,
yes.
sure. And we will catch everyone next time around. And thank you, Miranda, so very much for coming on. It was an absolute pleasure.
And thank you so much for having me on.